जय राधा माधवा जय कुंज बिहारी नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम एइथ कैंटो Chapter 8, text numbers 39 through 46. Devaha Swam Baham Harhanti Ye Tulya Yasa Yetavaha Satra Yaga Ivi Tashmin Yesha Dharmaha Sanatanaha Devagashvam Bhagam Harhanti Yetulya याशयेतवः सत्रयाग इवैतस्मिन् येष धर्मा सनातनः देवः स्वं भागं अर्हन्ति ये तुल्या याशयेतवः शत्रयाग इवैतस्मिन् येष धर्म सनातनः देवः स्वं भागं अर्हन्ति ये तुल्या याशयेतवः शत्रयाग इवैतस्मिन् येष धर्म सनातनः देव स्वं वाहमर्हन्ति ये तुल्या यशयेतवः क्षत्रयाग इवैतस्मिन् येष धर्म सनातनः देवा स्वामहानर्वन्ति ये तुल्यायाशयेतवः क्षत्रयाः वैतस्मिन् येष धर्मः सनातनः स्वामहानर्वन्ति ये तुल्या याशयेतवः क्षत्रयाः वैतस्मिन् येष धर्मः सनातनः देवः स्वां वहन्ति ये तुल्या याशयेतवः Chatrayai Vaitasmin Yesha Dharma Sanatanaha Deva Swambhahamarhanti Etulyaya Shayetavaha Tatrayagai Vaitasmin Yesha Dharma Sanatanaha.
Devaha, the demigods, Swambaham, their own share, Arhanti, deserve to take, yea, all of them who, Tulya, Ayasa, Yetavaha, who made an equal endeavor, Satrayage, in the performance of sacrifices. Eva, similarly, Yetashmin, in this matter. Yeshaha, this. Dharmaha, religion. Sanatanaha, eternal. Iti, thus. Swan, among themselves. Pratya Shedan, forbade one another. Why? Indeed, Daityaha, the sons of Diti. Jata Matsaraha, envious. Durlabaha, weak. Prabalan, by force. Rajan, working. Graghita, possessing. Kalasan, the jug containing nectar. Muhuha, constantly. Translation. Some of the demons said, all the demigods have taken part in churning the ocean of milk. Now, as everyone has an equal right to partake in any public sacrifice according to the eternal religious system, it is befitting that the demigods now have a share of the nectar. O king, in this way the weaker demons forbade the stronger demons to take the nectar. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Desiring to take the nectar, those among the demons who were less strong spoke in favor of the demigods. The weaker daityas naturally pleaded on behalf of the demigods to stop the stronger daityas from drinking the nectar without sharing it. In this way, disagreement and trouble arose as they forbade one another to drink the nectar. We are also going to cover like next few verses. We have like very, I think like verses 41 to 46 together. Let me read the translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who can counteract any unfavorable situation, then assumed the form of an extremely beautiful woman. This incarnation as a woman, Mohini Murti, was most pleasing to the mind. Her complexion resembled in color a newly grown blackish lotus, and every part of her body was beautifully situated. Her ears were equally decorated with earrings, her cheeks were very beautiful, her nose was raised, and her face full of youthful luster. Her large breast made her waist seem very thin. Attracted by the aroma of her face and body, bumblebees hummed around her, and thus her eyes were restless. Her hair, which was extremely beautiful, was garlanded with mallika flowers. Her attractively constructed neck was decorated with a necklace and other ornaments. Her arms were decorated with bangles. Her body was covered with a clean sari, and her breasts seemed like islands in an ocean of beauty. Her legs were decorated with ankle bells, because of the movement of her eyebrows as she smiled with shyness and glanced toward the demons, all the demons were saturated with lusty desires, and every one of them desired to possess her. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Because of the Supreme Lord's assuming the form of beautiful woman to arouse the lusty desires of demons, a description of her complete beauty is given here. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 8th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Churning of the Milk Ocean. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjanashalakaya Shakshur Unmilitam Yena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakatamayam Tatati Shvapatantikam Ye Krishna Karuna Shindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Shri Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarupasya Krupa Shindupya Yevacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangun Langayate Girim Yatkrupa Tamaham Mande Shri Guru Dinataranam. First of all, I am the backup speaker. I got a call late night yesterday. I was told I was supposed to give a class, so please forgive me. I'm not fully prepared. First, I would like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled here, so that we can discuss something which would be useful for all of us. Though from outside, if you look at all these verses, we discussed, even if you look at the purport of Srila Prabhupada for the last six verses, his purport has only one line. And even the previous two verses, his purport has two lines. Then one might think that there are not so many things to discuss. When I briefly looked at this particular this set of verses, there are multiple things which we can understand and appreciate from these verses. I wrote 6 points which we can discuss. The first one is probably it was covered in some of the previous verses, but even in these verses it is really important to understand this, that is the spirit of cooperation. So here we can see that the demigods and demons, they were trying to work together. They were cooperating with each other, though they were inimical towards each other, still they came together. What is the reason why they came together? Because of the nectar. So if even the demons and demigods who are naturally born enemies in some sense, you can say that, even if they can come together for a higher purpose, like why not us, like devotees who are aspiring for spiritual advancement, why we always have like problem in cooperating like with others? So that is like one thing which is like really important from the entire this chapter, churning of the milk version, the spirit of cooperation is very, very important. And it is very easy to cooperate with each other if we aim for the nectar. So what is the nectar for us? It is pleasing Guru and Krishna. So if we have that pleasing Guru and Krishna as the center, then we will be able to easily cooperate with each other. Otherwise, what is going to happen? We are going to find faults. It is very, very easy to find faults. I was hearing recently one of the lectures of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, and he was pointing out how even for brahmacharis, it is very easy to find faults with each other. One brahmachari might say that I don't like the color of the kaupina of this particular other brahmachari. I am wearing so saffron color one, and other devotee, his saffron is more pink. That even for small things we find faults. And I was hearing sometime back one lecture by His Grace Krishna Smaran Prabhu, where he was pointing out how it is very easy to get carried away, and this tendency of fault finding is so deeply rooted in our hearts, we easily find faults. Typically, let's say everyone comes to Mangala Arati, and then we will be telling, either we find faults or we try to boost ourselves. Oh, I came, Prabhu, you woke up only at 4 o'clock, but I woke up at 3:59, or something like that. We try to elevate ourselves much higher than others. So that is the reason why we are not able to cooperate with others. We think that we are much more superior than others, and that tendency is going to lead to finding faults. So if we can work together for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, these tendencies will slowly fade away. So that is first thing. And conversely, if we don't keep Guru and Krishna at the center, what is going to happen? We are going to have quarrels. And many times, the downside is that whatever, we might not even think that the quarrels as real quarrels. We think that we are right, and we are disagreeing with some other devotee who is not right. So that is how we will be seeing. As we can see here, the demons, they are preaching in this verse 39 and 40. Actually, demons are preaching about religious principles. Demons, by definition, they are not following any religious principles. Actually, they are preaching religious principles, but they have an inherent motive. They are not preaching religious principles for the sake of preaching the religious principles or following the religious principles. They have an ulterior motive. Here they are saying that, we need to divide the nectar equally among all the demigods, because they are afraid that within the demons, some demons are much more powerful than other demons. So the demons who are less powerful, they are afraid that the more powerful demons, they are going to consume all the nectar. So because of that, they are talking about religious principles, please equally share everything to others. Actually, like, you know, like we have a saying in like, you know, like my language. Like, you know, if you go to a like marriage ceremony, like, you know, like in US the marriages are like so small. I remember in 2002 or something like that, I attended the first wedding, a US like in a wedding in 2002, and we had probably like about like 100 people, and the bridegroom told me, this is like, you know, like we invited so many guests. I was thinking, wow, like in a year marriages are so small. Like in, like for my sister's wedding, we had 3,000 like attendees. We had 3,000 people attending the wedding. So like in those kind of setup, typically, like, you know, like you want to make sure that, like, you know, you are not like, you know, in marriages they feed you like, you know, like very nice food. So you don't want to like, you know, let's say, like, you know, like you want to eat, they forgot to give you some sweet or something like that. Then you will tell, please bring, like, you know, for the next person, whoever is sitting, for this Prabhu, like, you know, you did not get sweet. Please bring sweet, please bring sweet. Like that you yell from the other side. Then the person will be, they will be thinking, wow, like, you know, this person is really great. He is asking the sweet to be served for someone else. And when the server comes, you tell, okay, like I also did not get, please serve me also. So instead of saying that, please give me some sweet or whatever it is, you tell, hey, like, you know, like, please serve sweet to the person who is next to me. Or, like, you know, for this row, sweet was not served. So that is exactly, like, you know, same thing which is happening here. Like, you know, they don't want, like, you know, like, often we might think that, hey, like, you know, like, I'm very, like, either we are, like, proud or whatever it is, we don't want others to think that, like, you know, like we are needy or that or this or whatever it is, whatever the reason might be, we might be telling certain things, or we might be like manipulating things in such a way that, like, you know, we hide the truth, or we present the truth in a partial manner. So that is like one thing which we need to like keep in mind. Like, you know, if Guru and Krishna are not in the center, like, you know, quarrels can happen. And also, we can manipulate things. So that's what, like, you know, like we will see, like, later on, how, like, I think even before this also, like, you know, like, all these demons, they were fighting with each other. And here, like, you know, like whatever the demons are presenting, though it appears as if, like, you know, religious principles, they are not religious principles. Because, like, you know, like Krishna is not at the center. The demons are talking about religious principles because they want to satisfy their own senses. They want to be able to enjoy all these material opulences with a greater degree by consuming the nectar. So that is the underlying reason why these demons are preaching about the religious principles. And that brings us to, like, you know, the other, like, another point, which is the tendency to manipulate. Obviously, the tendency to manipulate is demoniac in nature. And if you want to find out whether we are, like, you know, like how good of a devotee we are, we can, like, you know, like use this as one of the like, you know, scales, if you will. Like how much we are, how much, like what kind of tendency we have to manipulate, like others, or manipulate the truth, or presenting partial truths. Because this tendency, or these tendencies are demoniac in nature. Obviously, like if we have, like, you know, these kind of tendencies, we still have a lot of demoniac behavior. So we need to like address them. And like obviously the tendency to enjoy independent of Krishna, that is also demoniac. So like, you know, like all these are like, you know, really like important. And let's see what other points I have. And another point here is that if you see in these verses, both the demons and the demigods, both of them actually they are like, you know, trying to enjoy. So in essence, like, you know, enjoyment is common both in the demigods and the demons. Both of them want to enjoy. Only difference is the, like, you know, like either the level of enjoyment or, like, you know, like typically the demigods, their enjoyment is in the mode of goodness, and for the demons the enjoyment is in the mode of passion, or mostly, like, you know, in the mode of ignorance. But everyone wants to enjoy. So we cannot, like what it really means is that we cannot just say that we will not be enjoying. It is not that enjoyment is not good. Enjoyment is like inherent, like, you know, like by nature the soul is like in a pleasure seeking. The soul wants to be like, you know, like always happy. So enjoyment is not bad, but we need to enjoy in the right spirit. We need to enjoy for the pleasure of Krishna. If it is going to give pleasure to Krishna, if we eat like a lot of prasadam, please don't implement it immediately. Subal Prabhu might not be like happy with me. Like, you know, don't go and, like, you know, like eat lot of rasgullas and gulab jamuns and all those, and you can quote me. Please don't do that. So, like, let's say, like, you know, if Krishna is going to be like happy with a particular act, then we participate in that act. Yeah, the final point is, like, you know, like how Krishna reciprocates with us based on our desires. In here, Krishna, he assumes the form of Mohini Murti, a very beautiful, like, you know, like form of a woman. Because the demons, by nature, they are very, very lusty. Because he is, like, you know, like addressing, or like, you know, like he is trying to appease the demons, he is taking, like, assuming the form of a beautiful woman. If you see, like, you know, like in the pastime of Narsimha Dev, because Lord Narsimha Dev appeared to please Prahlad Maharaj, he even, like, he assumed the form of a lion. Because, like, you know, like for Prahlad Maharaj, that is the most beautiful form. But with demons, he is, like, you know, like assuming the form of a beautiful woman. So here we can see that, like, and like how the Lord, he reciprocates based on our own desires. So that means we need to be like very careful about what we are desiring. So if our, like, you know, desires are not, like, you know, like good, like, you know, they can, like, you know, like manifest. So we need to be like very, very, like, you know, like careful, especially, like, you know, like Kishore Kishori, they are like so merciful. If you ask them something, they will give. Like, and like we need to be like very, very careful what, like, and like we are desiring. Because if we desire anything other than, like, and like bringing us closer to Krishna, what is going to happen? Obviously, like, we are going to, like, you know, like move away. Like, you know, like we might be hearing about the pastimes of different, like, you know, like advanced, like, you know, like devotees, like, you know, like Maharaj Parikshit and like so many like other kings who are, like, you know, like so advanced devotees, they used, like, you know, like all their opulence in the service of Krishna. Then we might be thinking, oh, maybe, like, you know, Kishore Kishori, please give me like lot of extra opulence. But when we are not really ready to use, like, you know, like all these privileges in the service of Krishna, then we will be just like moving away from like Krishna because of, like, you know, like all this, like, you know, like extra opulences And then we will be treating like everyone. Already we are treating, or I don't want to say like we, I'm treating like everyone badly. If we get like, you know, like some, like more opulence and all those, like, you know, the sense of pride and everything else, which is not good for our own Krishna consciousness, will, like, you know, like grow more and more. So that's why we need to be like very, very careful about like what is our intention. Because based on our intention and desire, like, you know, like if we are having certain kinds of intentions and desires, like, you know, it is going to be like fulfilled. Because that is one of the like outcomes of, like, you know, indirect outcomes of devotional service. When we practice devotional service, obviously, like, you know, like we get, like, you know, like fame and like wealth and so many different things. These are kind of the side effects of devotional service. But if we want to bring those side effects into the main picture, when we are not ready, it is going to do like a lot of harm to us. So that is like another point, like, you know, like which is like apparent from this particular like in a set of verses. And like finally, like, you know, like here we can see that both demigods and demons, they were having like a lot of quarrels, and no material thing is going to help us in stopping those quarrels. We need to take a spiritual approach. Unless we are going to bring Krishna at the center, we will not be able to like, you know, like bring an end to those quarrels. So if we find ourselves like, you know, like fighting with devotees for like, you know, like a whatever, like unnecessary like reasons, or like, you know, though I'm saying unnecessary reasons, even for necessary reasons, it is not good to quarrel with devotees. So if we find ourselves like, you know, like quarreling with devotees, then the focus, like we need to know that our relationship, there is some deficiency in our relationship with Guru and Krishna. That is why all these things are like manifesting. Either our, like, you know, like chanting is not good, or like hearing is not good, or like, you know, like whatever the reason might be, like we need to find out, like, you know, like why it is happening. Instead of like, typically like what we try to do is try to find external reasons to justify things. And like, you know, I might quarrel for some like petty reason. I might say, like, you know, like Prabhu, you did not smile at me like when I, like, you know, sat in the Vyasasan. Probably, like, you know, like he is thinking that I'm not a qualified speaker. And or, like, you know, like we might think that, oh, like, you know, like Mataji smiled at me, now she thinks that I'm like very proud, or I'm telling so many things like that. You know, like mind plays so many tricks. It tries to, like, you know, interpolate, extrapolate and all those, and try to find different reasons and construct a story. Though the story might not exist, like, you know, it might not even exist, but we try to, like, you know, like come up with all those. So we need to be, like, you know, like very, very, like careful. So instead of looking for external reasons, like I might be, like, you know, I'm, anyways, I'm not angry with, like, any of you. I'm just, like, you know, making a joking point. But the message is not a joke. It is, like, very serious. Like, you know, like if I'm going to see the external things, okay, this devotee laughed at me, this devotee did not smile at me, this devotee might be, like, you know, thinking something bad about me, like that, if I think about, like, you know, the external things, then it is not going to be like useful. But rather, like, you know, like if we have any kind of difficulty, we need to, like, you know, look internally. Because all the problems, like, you know, if we think that there is some problem, Definitely there is a problem. The problem is not within others. The problem is within us. So there is always a problem. When we see a problem, the problem is us. The problem doesn't exist outside. The problem exists inside. Even when we are like putting in a difficult situation, maybe let's say some devotee scolds me, instead of thinking that what is this, I was serving this devotee for very long period of time, he is very insensitive, I did so many things for 15 years and I did one small mistake. It is not even a mistake, but he thinks it is a mistake and he is scolding me. Like that we might think. But instead of thinking like that, we need to take that as an opportunity for us to grow in our own Krishna consciousness. We need to then one might say what is good in someone scolding, right? Maybe Kishore is teaching us to be more tolerant, irrespective of hearing this every day, before chanting we mechanically recite. Anyways, that is another point I want to make. I am keep on saying we and we. Please, I'm not including all of you. This is the way I talk. So when we recite all these 10 offenses and everything, and we say that we need to be more tolerant than a tree, and we need to be very humble and all those, but we don't actually implement those. And when we chant what we are asking the Lord to mercifully engage us in His service. And when we are giving mixed signals, we are so intently chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then Kishore is wow, he really wants to serve me, but he is not yet ready to serve me because he is not tolerant, he is not humble. So let me, because he is so interested in serving me, let me give him some opportunities to become more tolerant, become more humble. So he is creating all these situations. Then now we get angry at the instrument. A devotee who might be chastising us or whatever it is. But it is everything in essence lies within us. Because Krishna, as we discussed earlier, he reciprocates based on our own desire. And we should not be giving mixed signals to Krishna. Anyways, we cannot confuse him. Rather he will confuse us if we give him mixed signals. But we shouldn't be giving all these mixed signals. We are trying to advance in the spiritual life and we try to chant better and all those, we need to be ready. We need to be willing to undergo different austerities. Though these are not austerities, but because we are not ready, we consider them as austerities. Undergoing lot of extra services or undergoing some difficulty or chastisement or whatever it might be. Anyways, there are lot of other things which can be discussed. Because I did not prepare, I know that my points were not that coherent. So maybe I will stop here and see whether there are any questions or comments or suggestions or corrections. And if there are any, I will ask Subal Prabhu, Krishnarchana Mataji and Prabhu to address them. Any questions for Subal Prabhu?
No.
So Subal Prabhu is going to ask a question himself and answer it for himself.
Yes. Namruchi Prabhu, thank you so much. A very nice class. Thank you. I can imagine if you prepare very nicely how much you will, enlighten the audience. Thank you. It was very nice. The professor. No. The situation of the demons, their asuras, and their quoting and bringing up religious principles. So they're trying to use religious principles for trying to fulfill their personal desires. And we also understand that this is a situation of the Kaitava Dharma, that there is, you know, religions with material motivations, personal motivations. However, Krishna does recognize, he makes a difference in the Bhagavad Gita, that there is the Sukritinas and the Duskritinas. So the Asuras as among Duskritinas, the Sukritinas, most of them, they have a material motivation, actually all of them. And so how do you recognize, you know, when there is demons that are simply using the religious principles for they're not really considering God there. They, you know, how and then there is people who are just materially motivated, but they're Duskritinas, they're Sukritinas. How do you make that distinction?
So, based on my understanding, the main differentiating factor is, like as you put, like, you know, what is the, like, motivation? If anything which is done for the pleasure of Krishna, though it might, from the outside, it might look like an impious activity or something which is not based on religious principle, still it is the highest religious principle. But if the motivation is not to please Krishna, then though it might look as religious principle, it is not a religious principle. Like, for example, like, you know, like Arjuna was killing, like, you know, like so many of his own relatives, and many of, like, you know, like all this, like, you know, like Pandavas, they were killing so many of their own relatives, and which is a most abominable action. So it is not at all religious. But why they did it? To please Krishna. So because of that, it is the highest religious principle. So the, in essence, the main differentiating factor is what is the real motivation. Is the motivation is to please Krishna, or it is something other than that? It can be, like, you know, it doesn't really matter whether it is done for, like, cheating others or putting oneself at a very high, like, in, like, position. Like, you know, like, we see, like, there are, like, so many different, I don't know, like, it is not, like, really religion. Like, so many different, like, groups of people, they congregate against a particular person who claim that, like, you know, I am God, or I am, like, you know, almost God, or something like that. So people try to manipulate, like, you know, things. And much more dangerous than a, like, untruth is partial truth. If someone is going to, like, you know, lie, that is, like, better. So because we can easily find this is a lie. More dangerous than a lie is a partial lie or like almost true statements, or, like, you know, something which is, like, almost true. They are, like, much more dangerous because they look like and smell like, you know, truth, but there is not, like, you know, that much truth to it. It is not complete truth because people try to, like, you know, change different, like, principles for their own, like, you know, ulterior motives. Like, you know, like, let's say if I am creating a particular society or something like that, and if I want to increase the number of followers, then what I need to do, I need to survey and figure out, like, you know, like, what everyone else wants, Now I can change my own principles to satisfy the desires of others. Let's say, I create another society, because I see so many devotees complaining, chanting 16 rounds is too much. Now I create International Society for Namaruchi Consciousness or something like that. And then I say that one round, now you don't even need to chant one round. You can chant 16 mantras. 16 mantras. Anyways, please don't do this. I am just giving an example. I can say that just chant 16 mantras. I can bring, I can quote from scriptures. I can quote from scriptures saying that, chanting, one mantra of Lord Rama is equal to chanting 1,000, names of Lord Vishnu. And chanting, one name of Lord Krishna is equal to, chanting three names of Lord Rama. So now we are saying that, we are chanting names of Lord Krishna, Lord Rama, and then we are also, calling out to Srimati Radharani. And for the name of Srimati Radharani, there is, no limit. Because even if you chant her name once, Lord Krishna is going to be very pleased. Like that, I can cook up some philosophy and then say that, even if you are going to chant just 16 mantras, you are chanting thousands of names of Lord Vishnu. That is more than sufficient. Then all those people who are thinking that, chanting 16 rounds is too much, then they will be attracted to the society which, anyways, it is an imaginary society which I can establish. So that's how people try to take advantage, because they have ulterior motives. What is the motive? They want to have a lot of followers. Why they want to have a lot of followers? Because they want to be the center of the attraction. Instead of putting Krishna at the center, they want to be the center. All of us, I heard in one lecture where someone told in a funny way that I think the lecture was on the material creation, where there are so many universes, where the devotee was talking about there are millions and billions and trillions and zillions of universes which are coming out of the pores of Lord Mahavishnu. But that devotee pointed out but there are more universes than all these material universes, because if you look at even one universe, there are unlimited number of planetary systems, and within each of these planetary system there are so many different living entities, and all these living entities invariably are thinking, I am the center of the universe. So in essence, if you look at in this room, if you look at it, there might be so many universes exist, because we think that we are the center of the universe. So that is the reason why we try to manipulate things. We want more followers, more fame, and that and this. So in essence, the short story, or long story short, the main differentiating factor is, what is the motivation? Is the motivation to please Krishna or not to please Krishna? It doesn't really matter. Not pleasing Krishna will have so many different things. And all of them put together, if anything is not done to please Krishna, that is demoniac. Actually, that is, when we even, in Nectar of Devotion and all these scriptures, when we discuss about sin, what is sin? The highest definition of sin is anything which is not done for the pleasure of Krishna. So that is the highest definition of sin. It is not that doing something so abominable. That is also sin, but it is much grosser level of sin. But when we advance more and more, the main thing is that we need to always do something which is pleasing to Krishna. I don't know whether I really addressed. So, thank you, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Hare Prabhu, thank you for your class. You pretty much answered my questions towards the end of the class, but maybe you could expand on some points. One thing you were mentioning was when we're serving a devotee, after so many years, 15 years you were mentioning, and all of a sudden we do one small little thing and they scold us. And I appreciate the point where you mentioned that we should take this up as an opportunity to be tolerant and more humble. And one thing I appreciated in this regard, that a similar point that Bhaktisiddhanta made in the first volume of Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, the chapter called Revolutionary Preacher of Truth, he essentially says, when Bhagavan is merciful to me, he will send unlimited people to speak sour and disrespectful words to me just to teach me tolerance. And the reason I appreciate it at this point is because presumably we're all aspiring PhDs, pretty humble devotees. And we could see that we're all trying to cultivate these qualities, humility, tolerance, and forgiveness. But we could see that they actually have no meaning unless we have somebody to disrespect us. We don't express our forgiveness or our tolerance to all our family and friends who always treats us like kings and queens. So what is the use of coming to the spirit? So my question is, you were mentioning that we should take this as an opportunity when we can't disagree, because disagreements are going to happen. We can't control that. That's going to be natural. But when somebody says, okay, to us, you should take this as an opportunity, and naturally the false ego or retaliate say, oh yes, I'll give you an opportunity to tolerate me. I'll get revenge. So how do we, how does one get out of this trap of the false ego where we justify our activities? Okay, this is an opportunity, but we'll say, okay, I'll give you an opportunity when we want to retaliate. You can get an opportunity to tolerate. Then we don't grow. So how do we get out of this web?
So, anyways, your question is like two-part. One is like how to respond, and let's address that first. So already we discussed one part, which is taking this as an opportunity for us to grow in our own Krishna consciousness. And another way to look at it is to see it from a personal perspective. If someone is going to chastise, what does it really mean? If someone is going to chastise it, it means that they really care about us. They really love us. You are not going to go and chastise someone on the road. If your own child is going to do something bad, you might correct the child. So it is not done out of a malicious intent. We want the child to develop a lot of good qualities, and we want the child to succeed. Because we have a lot of love for the child, then we might be chastising or correcting the child. So it is for the benefit of the child. We are not going to go and correct each and every child on the road. So whenever we receive chastisement, we need to see who is actually chastising us. This devotee, he has a lot of love for me. He is helping me in finding my own shortcomings. Because on our own, we will not be able to find our shortcomings. It is very, very difficult. Because most of the times when we are not advanced, because we have lot of false pride and things like that, so we cannot see any fault in others, fault in ourselves, but we only see fault in others. So that indicates that we are at the beginning stage of Krishna consciousness. When we don't see any fault in others, we see faults in us, then that means we are very well advanced in Krishna consciousness. The thing is that we need to see what is the intent with which the devotee who is correcting us is doing that. So we need to appreciate that love, And actually that will help us in strengthening our relationship with that person. Because it is not going to be useful for us if everyone is going to tell, Prabhu, you are so great, you are the most humble devotee I ever met. If 110 devotees keep on saying like that, even though we might be humble, then we'll be thinking, oh, I think I am humble. It is not one devotee who is thinking that I am humble. There are today, there are 68 devotees who told me that I am humble. So that means I might be humble. I am making very good advancement. As soon as we think like that, we just go down. So that means someone who is going to correct us is supposed to be much more dearer to us than someone who is going to say that you don't have any fault. You are the spotless devotee. You are Srimad Bhagavatam, which doesn't have any spots. Like that, you are spotless devotee. If someone is going to say like that, anyways, we can say that to a pure devotee, but we know about ourselves. What kind of anarthas we have in us. If someone is going to praise us overly and all those, it is not going to be useful to us. At the end of the day, we want to be able to go closer to Krishna, move closer to Krishna. So how can we move closer to Krishna? By moving away from all the material things. If someone is not going to tell us, Prabhu, you have some dirt sticking here, you will not know. There is a little bit of dirt there. Only if someone is going to tell you that there is dirt, then we might try to clean the dirt. If no one is going to tell us, we have dirt, then we think that we are very clean. So that's why we need to see it from the other perspective as well. So it is going to help us to move closer to Krishna. It is going to help us in identifying some faults which we cannot identify ourselves. And the devotees are doing it out of their love. And for the second part of the question, if we try to correct others, we need to ask. Actually, there was a very nice class by what is that devotee's name? He is a very senior disciple of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. Gaur Gopal Prabhu, His Grace Gaur Gopal Prabhu. He was mentioning, I don't know whether I remember all the parts because it had been a while since I listened to this. When do we correct others? To know how to correct or when to correct, or should we correct others, we need to ask four questions. The first question is, am I the right person to correct? That is the first question we need to answer. Who is the right person? The right person is a person who is in some kind of authority. If I am a parent, I can correct my children. If I am the temple president, I can correct the residents or devotees who are serving, rendering some kind of service within the temple. If I am the spiritual master, I can correct the disciples. First question is whether I am the right person. If the answer to the first question is no, I am not the right person, we just don't correct anyone. And second question we need to ask is the mood with which I am doing the correction is correct. I might be the correct authority to correct the person, but if I am going to have a different kind of intent, I might say that, Prabhu, in last class you were asking so many questions which I was not able to answer, so now I am going to give you, when you are going to give the class, I am going to do lot of research to make sure that I will ask you a question which you cannot answer. If that is going to be the intent, we cannot correct. So that is the second question we have to answer, whether our motivation in correcting the other person is correct. And third one is the method we use to correct the other person is the right method. If you take like, you know, any kind of like teaching and like how to teach and like how to interact with like people, what we see is that most of the communication happens like, you know, non-verbally. I believe that it is between some 10 to 30% or something, or maybe like even 8%. Subal Prabhu, do you remember Lakshmiwani Mataji's class? So it is something like that. Like, you know, like very, very small percentage of the entire communication happens verbally. And rest of the communication, it happens non-verbally. Like, you know, like by move, like, you know, the body language and the tone with which, like, you know, like I'm telling the same thing. Like all these are going to dictate whether, like, you know, the method is correct. Though I might be saying things in a nice manner, if my tone is not correct, the person is not going to take it nicely. So that is the third question we have to ask. And the fourth question we have to ask is it the right time to do the correction? If, let's say, like, you know, a devotee spent 10 days like planning for, let's say, like we have a big festival like Janmashtami, and a devotee had, like, you know, spent 10 days in figuring out like how to decorate the entire temple room, and they did not even sleep for 2 days, and then they were, like, you know, doing like all these decorations, and after they are done, like, you know, like if we go and tell the devotee, Prabhu, I think, like, you know, this pattern is not supposed to be like this. Actually, it is supposed to be like a, like big, like in a dip, and then there is a small dip. Like that, if we are going to tell this at a time which is not the correct time, the devotee is going to, anyways, I'm saying devotee, but it can be like anyone. Like, you know, the person is going to be like get angry easily, because they will think that I am spending like 10 days for this. I did not even sleep. I did not eat prasadam. I spent so much time and no one came to help me. And I begged this devotee for helping me, like, you know, to like assist me in, like, you know, doing the decoration. And this devotee refused that I will not decorate. Now he has the like audacity to tell me that this is not correct. Then they will, like, you know, they will not take it in the right spirit. So we need to also make sure that the time is right. So if we, in essence, like, you know, like we correct the devotees or we correct anyone, if the answer to all these four questions are yes, we need to be the right person and we need to be having the right motivation and we need to know the right method and we need to make sure that it is the right time. If the answer to any one of these questions is not, like, you know, true, then we don't even bother correcting someone. Because what is going to happen is that it is going to backfire. So, thank you, Prabhu. So, anything else? Yes, Mataji.
So, on the topic of fault finding, so since it's such a you know, fundamental human behavior that everybody struggles with, one of the thoughts I always have is that most people fault find because they're not happy in themselves or not appreciated enough, or in some way maybe a little envious, which also comes out of internal feelings. So you mentioned to always look inside first. Over my years of being around devotees, I always noticed that they're not appreciated enough. As a general rule, they do so much service. And, so I guess one of the approaches I always consider first is when there's a tendency to fault find is to realize that it's coming out of lack of appreciation. So to turn it around and think, how can I train my mind to appreciate first and understand, you know, all the good things before I even look at fault finding or I even consider it. You know, I always think that, you know, we're all spiritual warriors and that in a world that's against us, so we always have to think, how can we help each other and uplift each other first before we can correct anybody? So just a thought.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mataji, for adding that point. Yeah, it is like another thing which is important in terms of fault finding is that typically we try to find faults if it is kind of extension of what you said. The one of the reasons is that we have lack of understanding. Let's say like I want to find fault with a particular devotee. I will not be finding fault with that devotee if I understand how great devotees are. Like, you know, there are like hundreds of thousands of people in Chicago, but not there are hundreds of thousands of devotees in the temple. And instead of trying to do something so material, we see that these devotees, they are trying to serve Krishna. Instead of trying to serve their own senses, they are trying to serve Krishna. So how great they are. And if you read from Nectar of Devotion, where we see how great devotees are, even Lord Krishna, he cannot give bhakti to anyone, because Lord Krishna is supposed to be not partial to anyone. If he is going to give bhakti to anyone, with bhakti someone can even control Krishna. So that is the highest thing. So he doesn't give it to anyone, but rather the devotees of Lord Krishna, irrespective of whether a devotee is a Kanishta Adhikari or Madhyama Adhikari or Uttama Adhikari, devotee at any level, they can give Krishna, either directly or indirectly. For example, someone going for book distribution, they might have joined the temple only on that day. They were introduced to Krishna consciousness only on that day. But if they go and distribute a book, the life of the other person is changed eternally. That person might not realize it immediately, but it is for sure guaranteed that that person is going to go back to Godhead some lifetime or other. So it is just matter of time which is going to separate that person from Krishna once we are introduced to Krishna consciousness. So even a devotee at a very neophyte stage can give bhakti to others. So then we can see that devotees are actually, in some sense, devotees are even higher than Krishna, because even Krishna cannot give bhakti. Without bhakti we cannot reach Krishna. So then if we understand some of these, how great devotees are, even if we try to understand this theoretically, then we will be much more cautious. And another thing is that the nature of the offense. If we know how grave, nothing material can destroy bhakti, but if we are going to offend devotees, that is so grave that it can stop the appearance of bhakti. It will not destroy bhakti, but it will stop the appearance of bhakti. But other things, little petty material things, they are not going to hamper our devotional service that much. But if we offend a devotee, it is so dangerous. Then one might ask a question, is offending pure devotee is, I will be careful not to offend a pure devotee. This devotee, I don't even think he is a devotee. He doesn't behave like a devotee. He has a tilak and coming and sitting in the Vyasasana and giving class, but his actions are not like devotees. We might think, then we might justify that, I can fault find with that particular devotee. But how do we know a particular devotee is Like, you know, like at any stage, it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, like offending devotee who is at any stage is bad. It is not that obviously offending a pure devotee is much more grave. But offending any devotee is like, you know, a grave thing to do. It is kind of a self, like we are going into a self-destructive mode. So we should not like, you know, do that. And another thing is that even though we might consider that someone as a neophyte devotee, how do we know that that person is really a neophyte devotee? If you look at the scriptures, there are so many examples. Different devotees, like, you know, like different pure devotees, they were acting in such a way that they were not even devotees. But when the right time came, they revealed their divinity. So how do we know that whoever we are trying to chastise or fall fine is not one of those personalities? So it is always better to be like, you know, like safe than sorry. And I'm not saying that we should, because we are saying that we need to think that everyone is a pure devotee or something like that. We should always give a benefit of doubt. I don't know like everything, why this devotee is acted in a particular way. I don't know all the details, so I'm going to give benefit of doubt. I'm not going to judge this particular devotee. If you think of like, you know, like some of those things, it actually helps us in making sure that we don't like, you know, like fall find. Anyways, it is a very, I don't know, deeper, like broad topic. We can keep on talking. I think Prabhu had like one question. Maybe like we will end before I'm kicked out of the Vyasasan. Yes, Prabhu. Is it okay, Mataji? Yeah, thank you.
I was just thinking, Prabhu, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very insightful verse called Vase Bahunam Kalgaha Bhavet Bhartat Bhayurapi Ekeva Charatasmat Kumaryaiva Kankanaha. So just like, you know, these ladies, when they wear so many bangles and they move their hands, there's always kankanaha, there's always noise. But ekeva charatasmat, if one wears just one bangle on the hand, there's no noise. It's silence. So in that same way, there's sometimes noise and disturbances when we're always in direct contact. But just like Krishna says, solitude is sometimes the most important medicine. It lets you cleanse the inside and the outside. And so when you do come in association of another devotee, that exchange becomes topmost. And so that's a realization that I've started to also feel in my own experience, that it's important as much as you should have the association, but also you should take the time to really dwell inside and to gain that solitude experience. Otherwise, everything becomes not so amrita, as they say.
Thank you, Prabhu. Actually, that solitude is more like a double-edged sword. The mood has to be right. So that is like much more important than like, you know, being in solitude. Let's say like, you know, like if the mood is right, then we can appreciate the like association of the devotees. Let's say like, you know, like you are in a place where there are like no devotees, then what you will do, you will anchor to have the association of the devotees, and when we get that association, we will appreciate that association. Then, because we are like appreciating, like as Mataji pointed out, when we have that appreciation, the tendency for fault finding and all those are going to be less. But if the mood is not right when we are in solitude, then it is going to like backfire. Because if you are not trained properly, being alone is going to be the worst thing which we can do. Because mind is going to, like, you know, most of the times physical proximity is not the main reason why fault finding or discrepancies and fighting and all those things are happening. So rather than the physical proximity, it is the attitude which affects. So we can be alone and then mind will be thinking 110 things. Because we don't have anything else to do, mind will think, that devotee on April 1st, 2011, he did this. Then on May 31st, he said that. Like that, mind will list all this. And when we come in the association of with that devotee, then we will pounce on that devotee. Prabhu, do you remember? You said this, that, and that, and that. So that's why it is a double-edged sword. Whatever you said, it has value, but more than the physical process of solitude, the preparation we have or the consciousness we have is much more important. Most of the time, these are tools, solitude and other things, observing mauna, all these are various tools. And tools are only good if the consciousness is going to be good. We will not derive the full benefit out of these tools if the consciousness is not going to be good. So I just wanted to make that point. So Prabhu, Vijayendra Prabhu, would you like to add anything more?
I just remember a song that said, and what he was saying, sometimes a man must be alone and this is no place to hide. So I thought that was kind of relevant.
Thank you, Prabhupada. So thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.